Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Howard, thank you very much. The voice of our announcer, Howard, whose last name escapes me, but Howard always does a great job. And we are back here at Skip Page's Little Bar. Howard Hoffman?
Yep.
It's a great he should be in broadcasting. That's a terrific name.
And he was formerly the announcer for WABC and KABC. Yeah.
Wow. He's got the chop. Yeah. Here now the news with Howard Hoffman. Yeah. I love that. Howard Hoffman.
Was he related to Sebastian?
We call him Ho-Ho for short.
All right. Ho-Ho, thank you very much. We're here in the corner booth taking up some very expensive real estate in Skip Page's Little Bar. But fear not, we're going to contribute to his bottom line by ordering some burgers in a few minutes.
I'm not paying for those.
Me either.
I don't look at me. We should.
No, absolutely not. That is the sound of my good friend Randy Florence, my spiritual guru and co-host. You heard from our producer, John McMullen, and Ho-Ho, and the chuckles of our guest, Mr. Brian Ellis, whom we will introduce momentarily. How are you, Randy? Everything's good?
Chuckles. I just flashed back to Mary Tyler Moore.
Chuckles.
I'm sorry.
Chuckles the Clown.
Chuckles the Clown. What a great episode. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Everything's...
Can you feel the change in the valley starting to happen?
Yes. It's raining. Oh, no. You just spilled your drink.
I have a drinking problem.
Oh, there's Art. Ladies and gentlemen, we have
Hello,
a guest.
I'm doing great. You can feel the change in the valley. We're moving into the season.
There are more cars on Monterey. It has taken me incrementally longer to get from the TV station to the little bar.
Just slow down.
No, they need to go faster. With the more cars, if you move the volume of vehicles at a faster rate, we can all get where we're going sooner.
We should only be doing that in Cathedral City.
Instead of getting there faster.
Yeah. No, we just need to get everywhere faster.
I'm not going to be Abe Simpson for this episode. I'm too happy.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you're Abe. No, it feels terrific. We're getting some fall weather. And it is just, it's nice to feel that coolness out there again.
And to look at you from across this table.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm delighted to have our guest who has been, I met Brian Ellis 20 some odd years ago. Brian was the maitre d' at Melvin's, the Ingleside Inn. For how many years did you serve in that capacity, sir?
5 decades.
Holy cow.
5 decades.
45 years.
But more importantly, you were Mel Haber's right-hand guy.
Or his left-hand man.
And Melvin's was, and you well know this because you saw, but when I first got to town, discovered that as a great piano bar and haunt, I was in there almost every night after work.
Or sometimes before work.
Sometimes before work.
Did you ever actually see him out in the parking lot over and through the night?
No.
Oh, so
no,
you did go home.
There are many instances where, so there was a great entertainer, our good friend Nino Fontana.
Fabulous, fabulous man.
I would drive Nino home.
More than once.
More than once. More than once. There's a story about it. We'll discuss that.
Father Seamus.
I usually
Father Seamus, yes.
Sorry.
I usually do a ton of research for these things. I've done zero because I was just so excited knowing what Brian was going to be talking about today.
Brian's got so many great stories, and some of our stories overlap.
Right, yeah, they do.
But no, I was often at Melvin's on my dinner break, and then I'd go back and do the 11 o'clock newscast, and then I'd come back.
You broke my Melvin's cherry.
That's an awkward way to put
Patrick
it.
Drug you there? Right, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And my wife was with us.
That's right. Now it sounds modestly better, I think. I did take you to Melvin's for the first time.
You did.
Oh, God. Sorry, I'm not allowed too much laughing.
T- take us back to when you first started at Melvin's and how you got to know Mel and how then you became, honestly, you were the guy, if people wanted to get into Melvin's and there were nights where you could not get into Melvin's, if they knew you, they had a shot at it.
Absolutely.
But if they didn't.
I'm sorry.
But they were out. He was the gatekeeper. He was the guy.
I left Redondo Beach where I lived on. I had several different boats there. And I lived on one of them. And in those days, there weren't cell phones. So I was lucky enough I had a landline going to one of my boats. And there was a couple that used to come and visit at Palm Springs, Jim and Alice Webb. And they called me up one day. He says, you got to come back. There's a place opening up called Ingleside Inn. Of course, I'd never heard of it. Back in 1975, I was 24 years old when I came here, and 50 years later. And so I come and walked around the property, met Mr. Haber, filled out a paper application, which they had back in those days. There weren't computers.
There was no HR department in there.
We didn't, 50 years we were there, we didn't have HR. We didn't know what it was. HR was him and I.
That's why it stayed open all those years.
And Mr. Haber, and he says, when can you start? And I said, when would you like me to start? He said, what about tomorrow? I says, no. Give me, I have to go back, unload one of my boats, get everything I pretty much own in my car, and then I came back. It was about 2 days later. Okay. And I found out real quick that he didn't know too much about the restaurant business. Okay. I found out months later I knew less than he did. Okay? It's true.
I like how your story's going.
Yeah, but we had two buffoons. Mr. Haber didn't know how to open the cash register. Of course, I knew how to do that. First thing I learned, we didn't know how to flip hamburgers, okay? We didn't know anything about menus. We had one gentleman, his name was Alan Mauld, okay? He was like the founding father. Alan Mauld worked at the Grossinger Hotel in the Catskills. He ran the 21 Club and on from there. But we found him shortly after we started, okay? But it was an amazing, like Patrick said, it was an amazing time, okay? The people we took care of, the people we waited on, the people we asked to leave, was just, it was a list of who's who. And it was just totally incredible.
One of the people that you asked to leave was Steve McQueen.
Yes, that's another story. I don't want to give up too many stories and nobody will buy my book. Okay.
Oh, you're on a book.
Yes, I have.
We're going to touch the tip of the iceberg. We're going to tantalize people with some stories. Right. But you really need to buy the book to hear them all. But there are stories about Sinatra, who had his rehearsal dinner, with Barbara prior to their wedding.
Paid by the
Annenbergs. Took place at Sunnylands.
The wedding was,
in 1976.
Yes.
I want to learn a little bit about you first.
Oh, let's get back to me then. that was in me. But
where are you born?
Oh, Lawndale, California. It's a suburb of Los Angeles, okay? In 18, I left my house, where my family is, moved to Redondo Beach. I bought a boat, and I was living on it, okay? Then I bought a bigger boat.
At 18 years old?
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah.
And that's when Redondo Beach was really Redondo Beach. We were building restaurants. It was a great place to be, Redondo Beach, Mimosa Beach, Palos Verdes. But I left there in 1975 to go to work, as I said earlier, to Melvin's restaurant. I didn't know what I was getting into, okay? I didn't know how to tin bar. I didn't know how to carry a tray. But there were a couple bartenders, Eddie Zachary, I think is still around, Danny Green, George Balabas. They took me under their wings as far as how to order drinks at the bar, okay? Then there were a couple seasoned waiters from other restaurants that helped me a lot, okay? And within about a year's time, I was working with Bobby Boldock, who was there also 45 years, in the main dining room as a kitchen waiter. I didn't know how to carry a tray. It was ridiculous, but I did. But in those days, once a table turned, 5 minutes later, so we set more people. And I'd come out of the kitchen carrying this tray. Oh, good, there's an empty table. So I dropped off the food to Bobby. He would serve it. I'd go back in, get another tray of food for another table. The table was empty. There's people sitting there already. So when does this all end? I said to myself. Okay. But
I didn't want to work in a popular place.
Right. I just wanted a job. But anyway, it turned out. It was like a touch of golden heaven working with Mr. Haber. We clicked. And Alan Mauld was, like I said, the godfather, ran the place. And that's how I got here.
Was there anything as you were growing up as a young man that made you think, I really want to go into the restaurant business?
Never.
Never.
No.
What were you thinking you were going to do?
Well, my family had a ceramic towel business. They had for 35 years. He sells it to my other brother, my oldest brother, Joe. So Joe's doing the towel business now, okay? But after 3 years, after my father retired, played golf, traveled, played gin, he's going to work with my brother, Joe. And I says, Dad, why are you going back to work? He says to me, try spending all day with your mother. That's what he told me. Yeah, that was his line.
That's funny.
But it was, Melvin's was a fabulous place.
So I mean, when you started, you were just waiting.
I was a waiter with Bobby in the main dining room. I didn't know shit.
And so when did you take over the front podium?
Front podium I took after I was in the main dining room, the Ruth Hardy room. Then Alan Hall says, he's a lousy waiter. Let's make him the maitre d'. I don't know if that's true or not, but it sounded good.
You got kicked upstairs for being not good at your job.
The Peter Prince.
That's where I stayed for those 45 years on the door. Yeah, then Alan Hall passed away. Then I became the chief of staff to Mr. Haber. I wouldn't give up the door. I wouldn't give up that title. And I had it all those years. And several years later, the California Restaurant Writers Association awarded me with Maitre d' of the Year for the Southern California Restaurant Writers Association.
Wow.
That was a high
honor. That's really cool.
Yeah. And then, 10 years later, in spite of everything, the California Restaurant Writers Association awarded me with the Maitre d' of the Year for the entire state of California. No man had ever received two of those, okay? Anyway, Mr. Haber threw the largest gala. I think I used this in my star speech. Mr. Haber threw the largest party hosted, which really shocked everybody.
It did not host often.
No. Matter of fact, Patrick was in one night, and Mr. Haber said, I'd like to buy you a drink. And Patrick, what about your wife? What about her? I want to buy you one. Yeah, or something like that, the story goes.
You told me one about
go ahead.
About the drinks that you got.
One, Mel, he took a liking to my wife, and one night he came over, and as he often did, he'd tell a quick story. Mel was a master of this. Sometimes you go into a restaurant, and the owner comes over, and they want to chat, and they kind of stay too long. Mel knew, he came over, he'd tell you a funny story, he'd get a laugh.
It wasn't always funny, but he told the story anyway.
And then he disappeared in the crowd, next table. That evening, and he had taken care of the check, which almost never happened, which couldn't. Mel knew everybody. If he bought every friend of his a drink, he'd have been out of business.
Very true.
But the next day, Mel and I lived nearby, and we shopped at the same store, and I'm in the grocery store, and I'm coming around the corner with my cart. He comes around the other with his, and I said, Mel, I just want to thank you. He says, for what? I said, for the cocktail last night. It was very nice. He goes, and he pulls me really close. He goes, I bought you a drink. Listen, don't tell anybody.
It's a true story.
That's so good.
Keep it under wraps.
Don't tell anybody.
Mr. Haber, some people would say, Mel, I come in here twice a week. He says, I'm one of your best customers. He says, Mr. Haber replies, it's not how often you come in, it's how much money you spend. Okay? And then another reply says, no, he says, I've been coming here for 4 years and bought me a drink. He says, when you go to Neiman Marcus or Saks Fifth Avenue, when you buy 5 sodas, they give you six one free. He says, no. But every time you buy a drink for somebody, you're taking, back in those days, $10 out of the cash register. That was our feeling. That was our thought. We learned that from Alan Mull. Because you're right, if you bought a drink for everybody that came in every now and then or whatever the case may be, like Patrick said, you'd be out of business.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
Look, there was a whole group of it, and there were over the year. I mean, Brian certainly knows this, but when I first arrived in the early 2000s, there was a group of us that was in there every night.
Yeah.
You can't buy those guys a drink. We're there every night. You'll go broke doing it.
Because eventually you want them to leave.
Back in the old days,
they didn't leave.
No one left. No, we would be well past.
Right. Well, as long as you're still paying.
Let's just shut the door. Just shut the door, lock it.
Yeah.
So you just,
PTSD.
But the greatest thing about Brian, though, was when, and I figured after a few years here, I got on Brian's radar. He knew he knew my name.
Ooh.
And getting into the Sunday Jam was virtually impossible back in those days. And they still do a Sunday Jam. It's still great. Michael Healy does a great job.
Yeah.
But it was the thing that you did on Sundays in the Coachella Valley.
Packed.
There was a line out the door. There was a line. It started at 3:30, and if you didn't get there by 2:30, forget it. You didn't get a table. But I used to show up, and Brian would be managing the crowd, and he would see me. And that was easier because usually it was just me, and he would just wave me. He'd find a bar stool for me. But if you got that wave, you knew you were good. Brian would look at you. And he'd be standing there talking to somebody going, no, you can't. No, I'm sorry. No. And then he'd see you over this way.
One of the things I love about this valley, and I've been here 15 years now, is the fact that it's possible for a maitre d' to be like the single most important person in the city for a length of time.
Not only possible, it is what it is.
The maitre d' is a dying animal, dying breed. For 45 years, it was my livelihood. For 45 years, it was what I did. And I like to think that I did it well. If Mr. Haber needed upgrade on an airlines, I'd make a phone call, he got the upgrade. If he wanted prime seats at the McCallum Theater, I'd make a phone call. He got those seats.
I have a couple of requests.
Please write them down. Write them down and text them to
me. Are you still able to do this?
No, maybe back then. I don't know about now.
No. He hands me tickets from 1973. That's right, McCallum.
The good news is you're going to go see Frank Sinatra.
Junior.
No, can't see him either.
No, that's
true. I mean, that is, and I think that's a really important point. You were front of the house, but you also, you serve Mel the same way you serve the customers. You took care of people's needs, and Mel relied upon you all those years.
I'd work the lunch shift, then 2 days a week I'd go play tennis with Alan Mald, Richard Levin, and Patrick McNee, okay? And then I'd get back home around 4:30, shower, and go back to work, okay? Mr. Haber also spent the mornings there and the afternoons. In the early days, we were 7 day a week jobs. We were getting started, okay? And then, but as time went on, then I'd get back around 5 o'clock, get everything all set up and stuff. Mr. Haber would show up 6:30. And he says, what's going on? So we got so and so on 32, you got so and so on 54, you got so and so on table 78. It's okay, thanks. He'd go to all the wrong tables. Okay, true story. So he comes back. I talked to those people on 32. They didn't know who I was. Boss, that wasn't 32 you went to. That was 33. That's why they didn't know you. And I said, Mel, Mr. Haber. I never called him Mel. Mr. Haber, what we're going to do is I'm going to give you one table at a time. Go to the table, come back. Go to the next table, come back. I was his right-hand man. Yeah.
He relied upon you 100%.
You mentioned you knew nothing about being in the restaurant business when you first started there. No. Early on, can you tell us any stories about things that just went terribly wrong because you didn't know what you were doing, or did you pick up on it right away and get really good?
I don't remember those days. No.
The days where things went wrong.
I'll give you one example. Okay, it was New Year's Eve. It was our business already 15 years. Mr. Haber is a believer in overbooking, okay? It's just a little bit of a scary story. But he overbooked. I had people waiting already prepaid and no tables and chairs. Okay? And I was having a heart problem at the time. Not at the time, but that afternoon, not that evening, right then and there. And Mrs. Haber, John, are you okay? Says, no, I got to get some air. She's strong. I can't breathe very well. She takes me in the back. She tells me how to breathe. In, out. I went back to work just like that. I found seats for everybody. It was a fabulous night. But that was
So that was your medical treatment. Breathe in and out.
Yeah, that's what it is. I still do it. But it was just like Patrick said, I hate to repeat this, it was a magical time. And we listened to what our customers had to say. Okay? And Mr. Haber would go around and write them down. Right? No, you should do this, and no, you should do that. Then Mr. Haber would just write them down. Even if he didn't write them down, the people thought they were writing them down, and they thought they were impressed. So the next morning, he said, Brian, says, who should we do this? No. Should we do this? He said, he takes those pieces of paper and throw them in the trash. But no.
All right. Go ahead. Talk about some of the celebrities that would come in to Melvin's, the people who would, you were the point person. They would walk in, and you'd have to get them a seat.
Most of the celebrities that Patrick is referring to had reservations, okay? And I'll think of a name here in a second. But they were well taken care of, okay? And they always sat in the main dining room, okay? I'm going to tell you a story about Robert Evans. But, and they were well taken care of. That's all they wanted. They wanted to be left alone, whatever it be. And there's no saying they put on the blue jeans the same way we do, but they just want to be taken care of. Some of them want to be fussed over, okay, and I know how to do that. Yeah. I have a schmooze them, the king of schmooze. But, yeah, it was an incredible day. I have in the book signatures of famous actors, producers in this book, okay, presidents. President of Baja, President of Sonora. This part of this book just goes on with these signatures, okay? I tell you who was a great customer to wait on. It was Debbie Reynolds.
Ah.
Fabulous, fabulous lady, okay? And she drank White Zinfandel. Bobby Baldock drank White Zinfandel. Mr. Haber drank White Zinfandel, okay? But you get, the ones that would come on a regular basis, you get to know them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And I'll tell you one quick story about the celebrities knowing my service staff. I had a busboy. His name was Jaime Castaneda. Okay? And Mr. Sinatra was in one night with a party. Okay? And I think Jaime had been waiting on him 13 years or whatever. And this is one story I tell, which is also in the book. He calls me over and says, "Brian, yes, Mr. Sinatra." He says, "Where's Jaime?" "Mr. Sinatra, he's not well." "What's wrong?" "Well, he's at Desert Hospital." Without hesitating, Mr. Sinatra, I can cry when I tell the story, he turns to the gentleman sitting next to him, says, "Find out exactly what room he's in. I want to take care of all his hospital expenses." And Patrick, Mr. Sinatra didn't bat an eye. He said, he did it. The guy was incredible. Okay? And he says, "Brian, one condition, you don't tell Jaime until I'm passed on." 25 years later, whatever it was, that he passed away, I told Jaime, but I kept it a secret all those years because he asked me to.
Wow.
Now,
what time if someone said, "Take over his hospital bills." "Oh, find out where he is, find out how much hospital is going to be." He says, "Take care of it all." The guy didn't hesitate, Patrick. But
so many of the stories about Frank, about his temper, about that, they're all out there. A lot of these stories are not, because he said the same thing. "I want to do this, but keep it secret. I don't want to." He didn't tell people about that interpersonal philanthropy that he did just for people that he knew.
Yeah.
Maybe not very well, but he just wanted to take care of them. So Frank came in on a fairly regular basis, mm-hmm. but he had his rehearsal dinner before marrying Barbara.
That's also in the book.
Tell us about that. Yeah, but tell us a couple of stories about
that. There's only three people listening, so this won't affect your book.
They'll all want to buy it so they can tell the
facts. So we're sitting there. Ready? Alan Mould, myself. No, I'm 26 years old, okay? Not knowing who these people are. I didn't find out later how important these people were until years later, okay? So myself, Alan Mould, Mel Haber, Mr. and Mrs. Annenberg, Barbara and Frank Sinatra. Round table 40 right in the front. It was just lunchtime. We could sit there. And so Mr. Sinatra was really particular what he wanted to eat, how he wanted the vegetables placed on the plate, how many carrots, how many zucchini slices, whatever it was. He knew exactly how he wanted it. And I'm sitting there writing. Midway through this meeting, okay, Mr. Ripper gets up and leaves. And we're listening, Bruce talking. And I turned to Alan Mullen. "Why did he leave?" He says, "I'll find out later." Okay, the meeting's over. Okay. Then later I find out how the high-profile people they are. And they're having their rehearsal dinner at Melvin's. That put us on the map. When Frank Sinatra showed up, it put us on the map. Yeah. You got the okay, and Frank Sinatra goes to your place. And that's what happened. Yeah, it was incredible. So I went up to... I go up to Mr. Haber's office. "Mr. Haber, why did you leave?" I said, "Brian," he says, "you have a knack for what you're doing." And he says, "You're going to be with me a long time." He said, "But what happened?" He says, "Those people intimidate me. Okay? You don't know any better," he says to me. And I didn't. I just sat there and wrote and figured out what he wanted and stuff. But it's true, Mr. Haber was intimidated by a lot of these wealthy
particularly
people.
By Sinatra.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was.
And why was that?
Don't know why, because Mr. Haber was perhaps afraid that if he might have said the wrong thing, Mr. Sinatra might not come back. There was one night, I'm giving too much away. There was one night when Mr. Sinatra was there and Mr. Haber left early. He's driving home. And he says to himself, says, if I leave early, and Frank, or Mr. Sinatra asked, we always called him Mr. Sinatra, asked for me, he might get upset that I left early. He turned around and went back to work.
Wow. Mel told that story. I heard that story
100 times.
No, not 100. But Mel, he said to this day, I don't know what he said. I just knew that I had to go back.
Yep.
That's so fascinating.
Oh, there was some great in the entertainment over the years at Melvin's. In the lineup, you had most of the celebrities ate in the dining room.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, then Clyde Davis would eat in the bar because Clyde Davis loved Nino's music. Yeah, and he would come in with half a dozen, 10 people, and have dinner in the bar just to listen to Nino Fontana. Wow. We had people like Joey Sachs, George Allardyce, yeah, and all great entertainers. But I think in my book anyway, Nino Fontana stood out among all of them. He was, yeah, some of his music was repeated all the time, but he was good at it, okay?
Yeah. Was Melvin's also known for its food?
Oh, yeah,
then?
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay, La Valerie's was open a year before we did.
Okay.
And it was a high-ticket restaurant. Not that we weren't, but our food was good, okay? It wasn't fancy French or anything like that. La Valerie's served excellent food. We served good food. We had steak Diane.
Peppers, which was made
spinach salad.
Really?
And nobody did it back then. Nobody does it now. For sure they don't do it now. Okay?
You can't burst into flames at the table.
Banana Foster's. That was separated from the others. Okay? And then every June we'd do an inventory of what sold and what didn't sold off the menu. We'd throw out what didn't sell and we'd keep what sold and we'd add new stuff. Mr. Avery came up with an idea of chicken pot pie. Here we have this fancy restaurant, white linen tablecloth, everything. Chicken pot pie? So Juan was our chef. That's not for 35 years, okay? And we argued with Mr. Haber about it. Of course, Mr. Haber won the argument. Thank you very much. We knew what to do. It became the number one seller for years.
That chicken pot pie I had a few years ago there was the best one I've ever had in my life.
Thank you. And everyone also tells me that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing. But we ran a good, excellent food cost, which people don't know what food cost is anymore. We ran a great liquor cost. But Mr. Abel watched over all that stuff. He was very particular about that food cost and labor cost.
What were some of the more interesting food orders that you would get? Did anybody really go off menu?
Actually, no.
No?
There was enough on the menu. Once in a while, we'd do a steak tartare.
Yeah.
Where we had the filet. We'd grind it up. And Bobby Bolduc would put it on a wooden board with the egg and all the ingredients and make it tableside. But if we had the ingredients in the kitchen, we said yes. Absolutely, we'd say yes. Nowadays, if they have the ingredients and somebody wants something off a lunch menu, you go in the kitchen, you know, it's a lunch item. You have the ingredients, for God's sakes, make it. Yeah.
Why not?
Don't tell the customer to come back tomorrow for lunch.
But it's just amazing. But if we had it, we made it. We found it difficult to say no. These people, they're like, all the time. Canyon Country Club was a very popular place back. It's been closed for years. But we did a huge business with the members of Canyon Country Club. Okay, it's just they were there like all the time. They do their parties there, okay, and they're big supporters of ours.
And did Mel own the inn also?
Oh yeah, he had it all.
He had it all.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I got to officiate a wedding there a few years ago, and it was just the coolest thing.
Yeah, it was.
And there was somebody else that was hanging out that day, the chief of staff or something for Nixon.
Oh, no, wasn't that he was the grandfather of your bride.
Yeah, now the grandfather of the bride at the wedding. But you knew the guy.
Who was that?
Can't remember his name now.
Oh, all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank, but he was played by Kevin Bacon in the film
A Few Good Men.
Frost Nixon. No.
Oh, Frost Nixon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack.
Yes. Gosh, this is riveting.
That's the only time riveting. I've ever seen your memory fail.
How many years are you going back?
This is not that long ago.
Pre-pandemic, so 2018, right. 2019.
Okay, yeah. But no, we catered to a lot of very prominent people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did you do when you weren't at the restaurant, or were there ever times when you weren't at the restaurant?
Yeah, between 3 and 5, between lunch and dinner. I'd go home and take a nap. I'd go play tennis with Patrick and a few others. Yeah, but then I'd get there like around, back in those days, I'd play tennis in the morning as well. But I'd get to work around 11 o'clock. Okay. And Mr. Aber used to tell me, he says, I don't understand this guy. He's always happy here. He whistles when he comes to work.
What's
it's true.
Wrong?
There was only one day that I didn't want to go to work. Okay. I was interviewed by Playboy magazine. Okay. And one of the questions the person who was interviewing me, and this came out in Playboy magazine, is what does it take to get a good table? And if someone doesn't have a reservation, what does it take to get in? And I just, with this young kid, $20. But anyway, those days have changed. But Mr. Aber read this article. Now he's pissed at me. Okay?
Oh.
And it was just, he says, how could you say that? Maybe customers aren't coming here because they think they got to give you $20. That conversation didn't last too long, and everything's fine an hour later, okay? Then the administrator gets a phone call. We used to do a lot of convention business when the Canyon Hotel was here, okay? And Frank Saranta was his name. He was the director of catering or something up at the Canyon Hotel. And we do these huge parties, 15, 30, 40 people, okay? Sometimes set menus, sometimes not. I'd always sell them seafood platters, flaming desserts. One guy got a big bill, wasn't expected, calls Mr. Haber, that Mr. Haber calls me. He says, Brian, look at the guy's complaining, you charge him too much. I said, no, Mr. I went through the bill. This is what we charge.
We do?
Yeah. I said, if you want me to stop upselling, that was the word, upselling, yeah. I'll stop. No, everything's fine, go back to work. Yeah. He calls me up one time. He says, Brian, how long have you worked for me? And don't count tomorrow. Is that a question with a message?
Wow.
Oh, that was a joke.
Oh.
Right. Sorry, but I don't want to give the book
I would
away.
Have passed out right there.
Right.
The gentleman we were thinking it was Jack Brennan.
Jack Brennan,
passed away.
Yes,
yeah. Jack
right. Yeah, passed.
Sweetheart of a man.
Really, sweetheart of a guy. He was an Air Force colonel.
He carried what they call the football for the president.
Yes.
And absolutely. Then after Nixon left office, he became his chief of staff in the post-presidency. But he was a Palm Springs fixture.
Oh, what a sweet man.
Yeah, delightful man. Yeah.
When I met him, I said, so what did you do? And he goes, oh, I was in the military, and then I was in the service for the government. And I'm like, okay. It really took a lot for me to pull it out to find out exactly who he was.
But no, you wouldn't know. And like I said, had a fellow left one restaurant, came to work, his name was Matt, okay? And he worked the door with me, he helped me with the Sunday jam, and he introduced me to Jack Brennan, okay? I mean, Jackson's just down to earth.
Yeah.
What a sweet man.
Yeah. It's his granddaughter that I officiated the wedding for.
Oh, okay.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
The whole family.
Jack Brennan, very famous name.
Jack, for about a decade, I had a little Italian sausage company that I sold.
Very sold sausage.
And one day my phone rings. I'd put my phone number up for people who wanted to buy sausage.
Whatever, right. Yeah.
And one day my phone rings, and I'm like, hello? And he says, yeah, this is Jack Brennan. Patrick, is this you? You sell the sauce? I said, yes, sir. And we had met on a couple of occasions. He goes, listen, I want to buy some of this sausage. And he said, just tell me how much it is per pound, and I'll swing by your house and pick it up.
Oh, yeah. And then a motorcade.
Like, how much do you want? He goes, give me 10 or 12 pounds. I said, okay.
Oh,
I said, just come by. And he did it. He came by, and he handed me cash. And he did that, I would say, every 6 months, he'd stock up. And he'd just swing by the house. There was Jack.
Yeah,
running.
That's cool. Yeah, dear man.
Very down to earth.
So in Palm Springs during those years, there was some less savory stuff happening at times. Did any of that ever happen at Melvin's?
Nothing bad ever happened at Melvin's.
Okay. So there weren't any guests that maybe I'd be interested in hearing about that they're not around anymore, so I don't have to worry about.
Yeah, even when the mafia used to.
That's what I was talking about.
Okay, but let me tell you this story.
I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, but no, never got out of line, ever.
And they never really did in Palm Springs,
no,
did they?
No, they did not conduct business in Palm Springs.
It was a neutral town.
And they played golf every day at whatever country club they were living at the time, or the Canyon or Tamarisk or wherever.
They were just misunderstood.
I would say that frequent listener to this podcast, Bruce Fessier, might have a different version of that.
I think he's writing it right now.
And less frequent listener, but occasional guest, Todd Goldberg might even have a different Todd.
Yeah, sure, yeah, I do. Yeah,
he might have a different story. But Mel's story always was that they could have people from different families sitting across the lounge from one another, and nobody got out of line. They were,
yeah. Always gentlemen.
Yeah. And when did you finally retire, Brian?
I left there early December 2019. I sold the business for Mr. Aber middle of October 2016. I left early December 2019 because in the escrow instructions, I had to stay. But once that ended, you were there last night.
There's I was.
A picture of you and I in the book. Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, I'm in the book.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Oh, let's see if it really is. But it sounded good while we're sitting there.
That's a guaranteed sale.
He just told me there's a whole chapter about me in the book. So.
Can you ever get me a water?
Yes.
But, yeah, the mafia, when they lived here, vacationed here and stuff, it never got out of line.
There were some interesting characters who lived here and you would never have known. There was a guy... You remember Tony Pernesti.
Harold Shapiro's another one. Get to that.
The funny thing about... So Nino played for Melvin's for many years. Yes. I don't know how many years.
One time it was seven. Then we had to let him go for a little bit. Then he came back for 3 years. But he became a dear friend every day.
That sounds like a story.
Oh, Nino would get mad at Mel and leave for a little while. And finally, they'd... make up and he'd come back. One time somebody, Nino always closed his act by doing the Phantom of the Opera. And he had the cape, he had a hat, and he had a mask.
Yeah, right.
Now, Nino performed certain nights and there were a couple of other people who performed other times. One day Nino came back to do his regular gig and he opened up the piano bench where he kept all of that and the mask was gone.
I'm missing, yeah.
And Nino was livid. And he was convinced that somebody, one of the other performers, had taken that mask. Right. And he refused to come back and play until the mask was returned.
And was it ever returned?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was
so
returned.
Somebody did take it.
Yeah, yes, of course. But Nino would get mad, and he'd quit, and he'd go down the street, and he'd play for Tony Pernesti at Tony's Pasta Mia. And that's where I met Nino. But my favorite Nino story, and you were there this night, and I don't think John will mind me telling the story, but it's a pretty funny story. So John White would come in with me.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
From
the TV station.
And John is hilarious. John lives in Palm Desert, but if we were going to, and I lived in Palm Springs.
Right.
And if we were going to meet at Melvin's, he would get a room for the night for he and his wife, because he would not drive back to Palm Desert.
No.
And I'd get a call from John, he'd be like, hey.
God, I was waiting for this voice.
I think we're going to go over to Melvin's and hang out tonight. Why don't you come over? And I'm like, sure, that sounds great. And we'd show up at Melvin's, and John would have already gotten his room. And one night, so Nino smoked. John and his wife smoked. I did not, but I like to have a cocktail. Nino would take a break, and we would all go out the back door behind the piano, and they'd all light up, and I'd drink my drink. One night, we're standing there, and it was late in the evening. Nino liked to take a few breaks.
Tell me. I know.
There was always friction because when Nino took a break, Mel and Brian were like, how long is this break going to be? And every once in a while, Nino would take a break and go someplace else to get a drink. And then Brian's like, where the hell is Nino? It's a true story.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Before there were cell phones, okay, there was a bar down the street called St. James, okay?
Yeah.
And this is
Judith Chapman's husband, James, right. Owned it.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And super nice couple. And so Nino was supposed to end his session at midnight. Okay. My son was in town, so I left the restaurant at 11, went down to St. James. Who comes in at 11:15? Nino Fontana. So I had to ask somebody to use the cell phone. I didn't have one. They were the big ones like this here. So I call, and Mark answers the phone. Hey, Mark, is
Mark one of the great bartenders?
Yeah, with me 35 years.
Wow.
Super nice guy. When someone came to work for me, or for Mr. Haber and I, they never left. I'm like, Bobby, 45 years. Manny, 38 years. The list goes on, okay? But so I says, hey, Mark, where's Nino? Oh, he's around here somewhere. I said, when you see him, tell him to call me. Here's the number. So 20 minutes went by. Hey, Mark, you've seen Nino? He says, no. We don't talk to him. How can I talk to him? He's not here. He's at St. James. I'll make it quick and short. We had to let him go the next day. And I said to Nino, if you're going to stop playing, don't leave the property.
Don't leave the property.
Don't leave the property.
But
Nino
came back after that.
Oh, yeah, he did. Nino, it was incredible.
But Nino, so we went, Nino took a break. We took a step out onto the back door. Yeah. And John lights up a cigarette. Nino lights up a cigarette. And John, he's had a couple of drinks. Says,
Nino, I got a question for you. What can you tell me about the mafia and the restaurants around Palm Springs?
And Nino looks at him and he stamps at his cigarette. And I've never seen Nino get more serious. He drops his cigarette, stamps it, looks at John, goes, I wouldn't know nothing about that. And he turns around and he goes back inside.
Oh.
And John's like,
oh, geez, I didn't mean to piss the guy off. I was just.
And so I go in, and Nino is so mad. He's sitting at the bar inside, and he's lit up his cigarette inside. And Nino always drank a little Jack Daniels out of a plastic cup,
yeah.
And he had a glass of ice. And I sat down next to Nino, and I said, look, had a couple of cocktails. John's not doing a report. He doesn't mean anything by it. It's all off the record. He's just curious.
Don't whack him.
He's just asking questions. And Nino looks at me and he goes, your buddy John, he seems like a nice guy, but he has too many fucking questions.
Oh, Jesus. This is like Goodfellas.
Oh, it took several weeks.
But these stories we're talking about, I've always said, Mr. Abrams, you can't make this stuff up. When you read these stories in the book, it's just,
now, is the story about Nino and Father Seamus, is that in the book?
There's so many stories, I'd have to ask my wife.
All right, I'm going to tell that story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nino had a bit of a rivalry. There was this priest, Father Seamus, and I think, who was he, St. Francis?
Yeah, but we found out later he wasn't a real priest, Father Seamus.
Was he not?
No.
I didn't even know that part of the story.
And then I'm going to tell a story about he went and used our telephone, called Ireland, where he lived, was on the phone for 32 minutes. We presented him with a bill. But you still tell your first story first.
But Nino and Father Seamus didn't get along. It's Irish, Italian, whatever. I don't know what it was. And one night, Seamus came in, and I think he was already drunk.
Yes.
And he had another drink. And he and Nino, he started to badger Nino. And finally, because Nino would not fight a priest. He grew up a Catholic. Right. Father Seamus threw his drink at Nino. Just dumped his drink all over it. And so Nino, instead of punching him, he said, I'm just going to leave. And he jumps in his convertible, and he's driving down Palm Canyon. Probably driving a little too fast. Cop pulls him over.
True story, by the way.
And the cop says, Mr. Fontana, you smell an awful lot like alcohol. He goes, of course I do. The priest just threw a drink all over me.
And then the officer said, he did. The priest? I don't believe that. Yeah.
But you got to come up with something better than
Seamus
that.
Father Seamus threw his drink all over me. Of course I smell like booze. What do you think?
So another story about Father Seamus. I don't know how we got on the subject. But anyway, he asked the bartender, can I use the house phone, which is on my desk? You know? Yeah, go ahead. And Mark seems that he's talking on the phone for a long time. So in those days, we had 24-hour people at the front desk, okay, like the night auditor or somebody. Mark calls up to the night auditor, says, trace this call and tell me where it is. He calls back, he says, the guy's still on the phone, he's talking to somebody in Ireland. Mark says, fuck, I shouldn't say that word. Ireland, okay? And then I got involved, and I said, went up to him and just give me the readout, how much it's going to be. It was like $87 for the computer readout of phone bill or whatever, if you're staying in a hotel. And so I went down, and we rang on miscellaneous booze, $87. Okay?
Put it on,
I didn't
Seamus
want to pay it. I say, Seamus, you have a choice. You either pay it or don't come back here. He paid it. That's how important Melvin's was.
Yeah.
People pay for whatever they had because they didn't want to be 86 from there.
Were there people who were?
Over 45 years, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were some. Yeah.
That sounded just like Nino's answer.
Yeah, well, I tell you, Father Seamus.
Yeah, over 45 years,
but the
maybe.
Thing is, you can't be in the liquor business all that time and then not 86 somebody. I did 86 somebody. This guy sitting at the bar, Mark's the bartender. I knew it was going to be a problem. And I can spot problems when they walk in the door, okay?
And you let me in anyway.
That's right. Not right away.
No,
only kidding, Patrick. Only kidding, man. You know that. No. That was, ladies and gentlemen, that was a joke.
Anyway, I forgot where's it going with the story.
Oh, yeah.
So it's 86. Yeah.
I said, Mark, this guy's going to be a problem. Just cut him off. Let him have one more. Okay. So he did cause a problem. Between he finished that drink and Mark's one more, okay, he caused a major problem. He caused a fight. And so we escorted him out. Anyway, I said, Mark, next time I say cut him off, 86 him, stop. Because if you would have listened to me, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Okay. There was another guy, big, ruly guy, but I can't mention names right now. His names are in the book. Anyway, and this guy was giving me a hard time. I'm just being an asshole. Okay. Anyway, so I got a hold of a couple of the bus. I lined them up in the front step right through in the entranceway.
Yeah.
And the guy came and started giving me a hassle. These three guys, there's two steps going from the main dining room to the level of the bar, the floor bar. They just bounced on that guy and beat him up. Okay? And drug him outside. End of story. Then I was punched one time. And my wife's going to kill me because I'm telling these stories. But anyway.
It wasn't her. Oh, okay.
Because it's in the book. Okay? I hope my book sales don't go down, Patrick.
No, this is only going to drive your book sales down.
Oh, thank you very much.
People want to know. All right, they're going to want to know the rest of these stories. Trust me.
Good answer, Patrick. So, I said, people make reservations. They would wait an hour to get a table. It was incredible. They had a 7 o'clock reservation. They'd wait till 7:45. Okay? And I said, sir, don't you realize kings and queens keep people in waiting? The guy punched me, knocked me to the ground. My glasses went that way, my head went that way, and Alan Wald comes, he was the godfather, comes walking off out of the main down and says, Brian, what are you doing laying there, for God's sake?
Get to work.
Yeah, no, but I'll get to that in a minute. So I said, Mr. Wald, that guy hit me. Mr. Wald, did you hit my maitre d'? He says, yeah. How long have you been waiting? Over an hour. You're going to wait the rest of your life. Took him outside. Wow. Never got seated because he hit me.
Yeah.
Alan protected all of us.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was, yeah, those are, yeah. And there was another guy. I'm telling too many stories.
No, you're not. Trust me. It's okay to tell a few stories because okay. People will want to read them.
I can't think of his name right now. He's also a mafia guy.
But remember, the name's in the book.
Yeah.
Here's a little teaser.
Right. And he would always sit dressed to the nines. I can't think of his name. But anyway, and he would sit there with his wife and Michael Pepperdine was in the men's room. He sat in the second dining room. He was in the bathroom breaking the mirrors. He was mad about something. And I said,
breaking the mirrors?
Yeah. I said, Mr. So-and-so, I need your help. It's Mr. Pepperdine's breaking the mirrors. So anyway, and Russ Arturzio, who you remember.
I know Russ,
so yeah. Anyway, he comes from upstairs, and this gentleman took a blackjack leather thing.
Oh, yeah.
Blackjack out of his wife's purse and started beating him with it. The guy never went down. He was so big, but blood went everywhere.
Oh,
he's on the one guy that was with the blackjack, I think it's called. Mr. Tabor's at the next table with his wife and a couple that were going to be helping Mr. Tabor do some designing work around the restaurant or something. And there was another couple here. And blood's going everywhere. So anyway, Mr. Pepperdine staggered back to the second dining room. And Russ turns to the couple that was just in total shock that somebody's beating somebody else in this restaurant. He says, oh, don't be alarmed. He says, our next course is going to be sumo wrestling. That's the end of my stories. Okay. But
all right. Go ahead. The name of the book is Palm Springs Maitre D', a memoir,
yes.
Secrets and Stories from Behind the Podium. And when does the book come out?
We're shooting for October, but it's going to now be November.
Okay, it's going to be in November. Right. Brian and your beautiful wife, Robin,
yes.
Co-wrote it with you.
That's correct.
She had to write down all your stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What it was is people over the years say, Brian, you should write a book. Brian, you should write a book. Okay? And it wasn't until she came into my life 8 years ago. And she was the one that helped me get the star on Palm Canyon Drive.
Oh. Okay, it's a star on the beautiful Palm Springs Walk of the Stars. I was privileged enough to speak at his star ceremony.
Yeah. And so, I don't want to write it. He said, all you have to do is record all your stories. And I did. And she just typed away. Okay, there's over 4,000 words as of recently, over 200 photographs, okay? And what happens is if we're out with friends and stuff, say, Brian, whatever happened that? Oh, then starts another story. Robin says, you never told me that story. She starts writing it down. And then we keep adding a few stories as we go along. But she's an incredible lady, okay? To get me a star on Palm Canyon Drive, I was really... And she asked me, do you want a star on the boulevard? I said, no. All of them, everybody's on the boulevard. Not everybody, I should say everybody. But Mr. Abrams across the street. Not everybody. Peter sitting over here, his father's on the boulevard. But it was an honor. And by the location, it was an honor where I was located among all these people.
Yeah.
And the next adventure she has is the James Beard Award. Okay? The James Beard Award is not recognized front of house. You recognize owners and chefs.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what she's... That's going to be our next step. But that's... year to come or so.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm so glad you came in. I've been looking forward to this.
Very quickly, tell people where you are now.
At Hotel Paseo, which is just a few blocks from here. I went to work there 2 years ago this month. Director of Catering, Food and Beverage got a hold of me, okay? And I went to work for him. And I remember sitting 2 years ago, and I never call it an interview. I call it was that we had a meeting, okay? And he knew my history and stuff. He wanted me to work for the Hotel Paseo people. And he hired me 2 years ago, and I'm still there. Well, in spite of it.
We love that place. Anytime we go to El Paseo and we know we're going to have a late night, we get a room at the Hotel Paseo.
They have music four nights a week. Incredible music. If someone says, what's your brand? What are you known for? Our music. It's an incredible place. There's 50 rooms. Beautiful hotel. And people write comments after they check out or when they get home. And the main thing I always read, okay, is the niceness of the employees. Okay, I'm a believer. I can teach you how to serve food from the left and move from the right. What I can't not and I cannot teach you is personality and niceness. You either have it or you don't. Some of you can't be taught. But Hotel Paseo is a fabulous place.
If you want to see Brian and hear some of those stories in person, you go see him, but you can wait. And by the time our
podcast... He won't give you the names of any of the people in the book, but he'll tell you the story.
No, but he'll have a couple of copies of the book with him that he will sell you.
Yes, absolutely.
He will happily do that.
I can't wait.
And by the time this podcast drops, your book will be almost released.
Yes.
So you can look forward. And again, it is Palm Springs Maitre D', a memoir.
You can find it on Amazon.
You're going to find it on Amazon.
Or just reach out to me.
Or reach out to Brian. There you go. Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you. One of my favorite things about Brian, so Brian doesn't live too far from me. And we have a mutual friend, Art who is a wine somewhere. He's a wine distributor.
Yeah.
And I used to cook on Wednesday nights. I used to do a little Facebook cooking show. And one night, these two guys showed up with about a case of wine.
more than one time.
And we were cooking, and Art's a chef, and he started cooking, and then we started drinking. And the Facebook thing went a really long time because we just kept drinking and eating and cooking. Yeah. And it was
three
a lot
hours
of fun.
On how to
my wife's
pasta.
Like, you need to stop this. She called me. She's like, get off. You need to go. Always a pleasure. Brian, that was your delight.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you
very much. It was an honor.
And
really.
Brian did tell me, he told me early on, he said that after he met you, he most certainly would have 86'd you from Melbourne.
He never said that. He never said that. No, he's making that up.
It only happens to the best.
Please give something to talk about.
Yeah. Our thanks to our guest, Brian Ellis. My thanks to Randy Florence and John McMullen. And, of course, the whole team here at Skip's Little Bar for being our host. And it's always a lot of fun to just hang out in the corner booth. You never know who's going to show up. And you guys, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans. Thanks for listening.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
And dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between, sharing their journeys, how they've come this far. It's Big Conversations, Little Bar, at Big Conversations, Little